Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches, and that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on Facebook at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now, Jim Andrews continues his study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us on The Final Word. We continue our exposition of the book of Genesis. We have come now to Genesis chapter 16, the birth of Ishmael, son of Hagar. Now Sarah, Abraham's wife, had borne him no children, and she had an Egyptian maid whose name was Hagar. So Sarah said to Abraham, "Now, behold, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Please go in to my handmaid. Perhaps I shall obtain children through her." And Abram listened to the voice of Sarah. After Abram had lived 10 years in the land of Cana, Abram's wife Sarah took Hagar the Egyptian, her maid, and gave her to her husband Abram as his wife. And he went in to Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her sight. We'll stop reading right there. Godly people sometimes make bad, not to say wicked choices, but bad, unwise, imprudent choices. That's exactly what we have here. Sarah enlisted Abraham in one of those unwise choices. Sometimes God's ways of working His will put immense pressure on our faith in His character and promises. God providentially allows those stressors. And through these, we learn some painful lessons. But in the end, we land up on our feet. But our lives may get a little more messy or complicated because of our impatient problem-solving. God had made a covenant with Abram whereby He promises this childless couple, not getting any younger, that, incredibly, they will produce a progeny like the stars in the heaven for multitude. That was back in chapter 15. Also, the Lord has promised Abraham that through his descendants, Abraham's descendants, he will inherit the land of Cana, in which he is now an alien, though a very wealthy one. Abram believed God, and we saw in chapter 15, verse 6, that his faith was credited to him for righteousness. What Abram and Sarah should have done, though easy for us to say, was exercise a passive faith in regard to these matters and simply have waited patiently for God to work out the impossible. But Sarah was getting panicky about being childless. Now, we have to understand that in that day, childlessness was considered a reproach upon a woman, an embarrassment. So, in accordance with the customs of the day, a day when there were no such things as adoption agencies as in our time, Sarah decided to work out her own remedy, so to speak, whereby she could lift that reproach. She shared her plan with Abram. She had an Egyptian slave named Hagar. Hagar most likely was part of the benefits that Pharaoh had bestowed upon Abraham before expelling him from Egypt. Sarah's idea was for Abram to make Hagar his concubine, a custom in those days, then have relations with Hagar, and hopefully, through Hagar, gain a family she could legally call her own. This was not God's way. It was her way. And it became Abram's way. Abram understood her mounting impatience for the Lord to give them an heir as well as to lift the disgrace that she undoubtedly felt. Now, we take note of the fact that, again, there is no indication in the text that they inquired of the Lord for confirmation of this very human plan. That was then, and it is now, always a mistake. I don't mean when we go to the store and we need bread, we pause and ask the Lord whether to buy bread or which brand. We're not talking about those routine decisions that we make in life, whether to walk on this side of the road or the other side of the road, whether to clean the house today or tomorrow. But we all know that there are some decisions that can be very impactful. Anybody can see that. The last time they faced a decision like this, they had failed to inquire of the Lord. And what happened? Well, the two of them wound up in Egypt, and they got really embarrassed. And but for the grace of God, the two of them could have gotten Sarah defiled as a member of the royal harem. Now here is another blunder of that type. This one, born not of fear of anybody losing his or her life, but born of their mutual impatience for a family, and as I say, probably the added burden of feeling some reproach for not being able to have a child. So Abram acceded to this proposal, and guess what? To this very day, his descendants are paying the price dearly. In her frustration with her childless plight, Sarah complains that the Lord has kept me from having children. So, sleep with my slave, perhaps I can build a family through her. Now, Sarah's reaction was very human, but it was also very wrong. You see, if it was the Lord, as she conceded, who had prevented her from having children up to this point, then she should have submitted to God's sovereign will and left well enough alone. Is she trying to overcome her humiliation for being unable to bear a child? Or is she in desperation trying to create an heir instead of letting God work it out? Probably both, and I've indicated that. Well, in verse 2, for his time, I mean cultural time, or for any time, in fact, Abram strikes us as having been the kind of husband most women love, a very sensitive and accommodating man to his wife's desires. It's remarkable, really. Sarah appears to be a strong-willed woman who is not shy about manipulating such a pliable husband. I've never made a scientific survey of this, but from experience, I've noticed something that seems a little odd in my personal circles of experience and also in my historical reading. So many very strong men, and Abraham was one such, appear to be men who were easily manipulated by their wives. I don't know what to make of that, but that has seemed to be a truth to me. Again, Abram should have consulted the Lord rather than have gone along to get along. Their solution, his and Sarah's, is going to get pricey, as it often does when we strike out in our own way. This is not rebellion, of course, but what they do is born of frustration. Abram needed to tell his wife to cool her jets. He needed to tell her to let God handle this. But he knew her pain, and he consented to this jerry-built situation. Twice, Moses, our narrator, explicitly mentions Hagar as an Egyptian slave. By that little reference, he subtly reminds us, perhaps, that the tab for Abram's misadventure into Egypt was still running up. You see, unhappy consequences tend to dog the step of bad choices like a long shadow. God is merciful, and God forgives the repentant. But that does not mean we should know from the Scripture that He immunizes us against bad or imprudent choices. So in verse 3, after Abram had been living in Canaan for 10 years now, there he is about 85 years old, Sarah his wife took her Egyptian slave Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife according to ancient custom. Abraham slept with Hagar, and she conceived. And when she was pregnant, things start to unravel. She began to despise her mistress. Oops, Now we have a festering domestic problem resulting from Sarah's determination, with Abraham's cooperation, to deal with her frustration about being childless. And Sarah, good woman that she was, now becomes understandably a jealous woman when, in her own way, Hagar begins to send signals that she felt superior to Sarah as a woman. In that day, childbearing being such a big factor in the self-esteem of women, that was a huge sore spot for Sarah. That show of contempt hit her where she really hurt. And it ticked her off no end when Hagar, whom she herself had put into the arms of her husband, Abram, gets all uppity about her success at having a child with Abram. Interestingly, the Proverbs do teach us how unbearable some types of persons can become. One of them is a slave who is made a king, and also a slave who supplants her mistress in the eyes of her husband, Proverbs 30, 22 and 23. Well, Sarah was frosted out of her mind at this development. She accuses Abram, in the process of simply impregnating Hagar, of taking a little too much liking to Hagar in the process. Her female imagination is working overtime to make Abram more guilty of mental infidelity than he actually was. This is a mess that didn't need to exist. Had Sarah and Abraham been more patient? Had the two of them sought divine direction before launching this jerry-built reproductive scheme? Had the two of them not gotten ahead of God's plan for giving them an heir, none of this would have happened. Sarah, in her frustration and anger, jealousy, even calls down divine judgment on Abram for allowing Hagar to think she was more dear to him than just an alternative biological depository. On verse 5, to convince Sarah that she has his affections all along and his best intentions, Abram immediately concedes to Sarah, as Hagar's mistress, the right to deal with Hagar however she pleased. Putting Hagar in the eye of a jealous storm was just begging for abuse. Even though Hagar, by her contempt of Sarah, when she got pregnant by Abraham, did invite some retaliation, just retaliation, for her gross disrespect. Now domestic tranquility is shot to pieces as the fallout of this unfortunate decision to force the issue of having a child to call her own. We can see how messy and complicated and even sinful things become when we are reckless and do not bring the Lord in on our decision-making. And mistreat Hagar was exactly what jealous and angry Sarah did. Such a spirit does not accomplish the righteousness of God ever, that generation or ours. A human being in the grip of jealousy and fierce anger and passion is not a person to trust with the administration of justice when it is needed. One can understand from a strictly human point of view Sarah's reaction to Hagar's disrespect, but one wrong never justifies another as a remedy. So severe was Sarah that Hagar, a slave, risked her very life in fleeing from her mistress. Now, most ancient societies were slave societies, and slaves were expendable wherever slavery was institutionalized, and that was about everywhere. To warn other slaves not to rebel and become runaways, punishment was up to and including death. Hagar, of course, would have known that when she fled. If Sarah did not have her killed for running away, flight into that terribly unforgiving wilderness known as the Negev might have done her in. God, however, is far more merciful than raging Sarah at this point. In verse 6, we read that the angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring of water. It was the spring that is beside the road to the wilderness of Shur. We note that identification, the angel of the Lord, it's an ambiguous identification. Often this messenger of the Lord, as it appears in the Old Testament when it's the angel of the Lord, seems to be the pre-incarnate Christ. The definite article, the, would support that, rather than the alternative, simply a generic angelic messenger. Fortunately, not much hangs on the decision, in my opinion. The bigger point is that the compassion of the Lord in the case of Hagar, the Egyptian slave of Sarah, that's big. She is the victim here of her overreacting and overbearing mistress. And it reminds us, the Lord's compassion reminds us, that God is the God of the widow, the orphan, the helpless, and in mercy, the angel of the Lord, which we believe to be the incarnate Christ, reaches out to Hagar. And the angel of the Lord said, "Hagar, slave of Sarah, where have you come from, and where are you going?" Those questions are striking. Anytime, folks, we are disoriented in life circumstances and hardly know which way to turn, those are good questions to ponder. Where have you come from, and where are you going? If we're running away from someone or something, are you, my listener perhaps, it is good to ask, where have you come from? Because as we reflect, it just might, in the grace of God, occur to us that where we have come from is not as bad as where we have now put ourselves. And to ask ourselves where we are going might evoke the thought that where we are headed may confront more terrors and temptations than the place we are running from. Folks, it is always foolish just to react on emotion than to reflect with sober reason about what steps we're taking. Listen carefully. Rashness seldom brings us to a place of wholeness. Running away from problems seldom gives way to good solutions. Sober reflection nearly always yields better outcomes than emotional reactions. That is at least one lesson to be gleaned from this interaction between Hagar and the angel of the Lord. At least Hagar admitted exactly what she was doing, and that's always a good start. I'm running away from my mistress. Clarity about what we are doing is always a good start in righting the ship. Unlike a Rogerian therapist who likes to ask a client questions rather than to offer directions. Thankfully, God is not shy about giving directions to those willing to receive it. How long Hagar was left to reflect, we don't know. It's not important. What is encouraging to us in this exhibition of divine compassion and mercy toward Hagar is that God tells her the right thing to do. Then the angel of the Lord told her, verse 9, "Go back to your mistress and submit to her." That was not comfortable advice, to be sure. It was not what she wanted to hear, you can be sure. That is a big reason, by the way, why people turn in every direction for guidance but to the Scriptures. God's answers to their dilemma, especially in matters like marriage, morals, and money, are not what they want to hear. It amazes me how people will spend big money and drive a long way to have some dumb human oracle tell them what they want to hear. This, we presume, is Hagar's first personal encounter with the true and living God. And I am sure she had seen from a distance the faith and devotion of Abraham and Sarah, although Sarah, on her part, has not done the Lord a lot of credit lately. But it reminds us the Lord knows how to get past all the dust His flawed servants throw in the eyes of those whom He's drawing to Himself. For that, we can be grateful that in the final analysis, salvation does not depend upon us, but on God's sovereign election. In directing our paths, sometimes the Lord leads us through His Word and His Spirit to move out and to go forward, or to stay put. Or, as in this case, to go back to a former place or relationship. My dear friends, there would be 10,000 less heartaches and train wrecks out there if people in their despair and frustration would just listen to the Spirit, listen to His Word, go back, whatever, wherever, to wait on God to intervene. Amazingly, in this Egyptian slave, Hagar, the Holy Spirit had created a positive rather than a reactive heart. And without being explicit in the text, it is clear that Hagar listened and complied. Her humble compliance was met with blessed assurance. An example of the way our sovereign God had all this confusion comprehended in his plan, even before it happened. Amazingly, God even uses sin to work his will. Though he is never the author of it, James 1, but he is the sovereign architect who is wise enough to work his amazing art with bad materials. Well, in verses 11 and 12, the Lord makes a gracious promise to this abused slave woman. You are now pregnant, and you will give birth to a son. You shall name him Ishmael, which means God hears. For the Lord has heard your misery. As for Ishmael, he will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand against him, and he will live in hostility toward all his brothers. What a prophecy. From Ishmael, the Arabs claim their descent. This prophecy rings true, for the hostility of Ishmael toward Isaac is a microcosm of the generational hostility of Muslim, which most of them are, toward the Jews, descended from Isaac. But Ishmael and his descendants, as the prophecy projects, will have a fractious DNA that springs from a bitter spirit that will be constantly churning up internecine or intramural conflict and hostilities between one another. And you do see that among Arabs. As, for example, the Shia and the Sunnis, not all of them are necessarily Arabs. Ishmael would be a contentious character. That DNA would be passed on to his descendants down through the centuries, always butting heads internally and externally with somebody. Well, from this encounter with the Lord in verses 13 and 14, we assume Hagar personally came to the true knowledge of God and expressed her faith in him in the form of a personal monument. That spring or well at which the Lord met her, she memorialized. She named it Beer Laha Roy, which translated means either the well of the living one who sees me, or the well of one who sees me and lives. The former, the well of the living one who sees me, makes clearer sense in context. The idea of sees me is the notion of the true and living God of Abraham as one who, in compassion, has had his eye on her plight and has mercifully come to meet her. Her monument of naming the well is a personalized act of worship and faith in the God of Abraham. So in verse 15, Hagar, having returned to Abram and Sarah, having placed herself back in submission to her mistress, in time she gives birth to a son. As the Lord instructed, she dutifully names him Ishmael. He hears, the Lord hears, in witness to the fact that God heard her cries in the wilderness. These last four verses in chapter 16 again illustrate the spiritual importance of building monuments as expressions and testimonies of personal faith and worship. As the Lord comes to meet us in our crises and in the adversities of our walk of faith. This brings us now to chapter 17, the renewal of God's covenant and establishment of the seal of circumcision. At the end of chapter 16, we find a timeline that let us know that Abraham was 86 years old. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bore Ishmael to him. From there, we enter brand new territory. Join us again next time, friends, as we continue our exposition of the book of Genesis. God bless you, and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. And our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program is ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.